Welcome back, my friend, to The Silent War with your host, Dustin Nemos of NemosNewsNetwork.com, where we continue, with your help, to break the cycle of fake news. On this episode, we have mandatory vaccinations and a very important SCOTUS case looms, dealing with election fraud itself. Speaking of which, the U.S. Postal Service now has a spiffy new election fraud, Postal Return Service division in place, thanks to Joe Biden and the puppet regime. All of this and much more coming up after a short word from our Patriot sponsors. Here we go.
You've heard of the red pill, sure, but what about the green pill? CBD oil continues to drain billions of dollars a year from Big Pharma and the corrupt medical establishment as patients go back to nature for their quality of life for chronic issues. We have the purest, high-quality, full-spectrum CBD tinctures at greenpillliving.com. Ask yourself this, do you trust Big Pharma? Check the description for link.
NemosNewsNetwork.com, breaking the cycle of fake news.
A very important, albeit unknown, case has made its way all the way up to the Supreme Court, who has agreed to hear it. This important case could make all the difference in states' rights when it comes to state legislative power over elections versus the federal government. It's known as Moore versus Harper, and it was brought by the North Carolina's Republican State House Speaker. Listen to Representative Dan Bishop go into Congress and tear up the FBI for going after basically, right on the edge of poverty and mental illness, very low income white folks for these fake plots. This particular example being the kidnap and kill Mission Governor Gretchen Whitmer plot, which the FBI was 80% of and created and basically funded and then tried to lure in some people who were probably not all that strong cognitively to begin with. But this is entrapment. This is not them finding a crime and then stopping it. This is them creating a crime and luring people into saying something that it makes them complicit by accident. Obviously, this was a railroad job from the beginning, but that's what the FBI does now. So here it is in congressional settings.
5 minutes of questioning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Assistant Attorney General Olson, in April, in one of the DOJ's highest profile domestic terrorism cases, a federal jury appears to have found that the FBI entrapped people in a matter involved an alleged plot to kidnap the governor of Michigan. The jury acquitted two defendants and hung on two others. You're familiar with that case, sir?
Yes, sir. I am familiar with that particular prosecution.
All right. You've emphasized the importance of the DOJ's domestic terrorism mission, or of that risk central to the national security mission.
Yes.
Is that case a fair representation of how DOJ is handling domestic terrorism matters?
I would include that case among many others that are part of our efforts to ensure that people who serve in public office are safe.
I think the importance is undeniable. The question is whether that's what FBI is doing. Let me just go on a little further. The evidence that the jury heard, mostly in text messages and testimony of agents and informants of the FBI, was that the FBI did not discover an existing scheme and take the plot, collect evidence and take down plotters. Instead, the FBI appears to have contrived the plot, used its informants to draw people into the plot, and provided logistical and financial support to what was, in effect, an FBI operation. And the board behind me details just some of the resources that were devoted to the op. You had a lead informant, a guy named Big Dan, who was paid $54,000 over 6 months to pretend to lead a fake militia to recruit really disadvantaged and unstable men from a Facebook discussion group. One of them was living in the cellar of a vacuum repair shop. FBI paid travel expenses for people involved, food, even alcoholic beverages to take the targeted folks to a militia conference out of state. There were more than a dozen FBI informants involved in the process. Undercover FBI agent several of them, one of whom purported to teach how to make a bomb and used a bomb video produced by the FBI. At one point, according to New York Times, there was a nighttime surveillance at Governor Whitmer's vacation cabin, and four of the participants were informants, including Big Dan, or undercover agents. At one point, when the group was sort of falling apart in August 2020, the FBI handler congratulated Big Dan, said, quote, "Look at you, bringing people together." Now, he congratulated him for breathing new life into the plot. Not as well known, the same FBI agent, Jason Chambers, coached Big Dan in a parallel scheme to recruit folks into a contrived plot against former Virginia Governor Northam. And at one point, he's asked by Big Dan how to couch the plan to one of the recruits, and Chambers wrote, quote, "Mission is to kill the governor specifically." That's the evidence I understand from the trial. Don't know that it's a complete sampling of it, Mr. Attorney General. But is that the kind of conduct that DOJ and FBI are engaged in pursuing domestic terrorism matters?
So I'm sure you can appreciate that case, as you know, involves defendants charged with kidnapping the governor of Michigan. It's an ongoing case. The judge has ordered a retrial, and that retrial is set. Given that it's an ongoing case, I simply can't comment on any of the questions you've asked.
Well, it's not ongoing as to two defendants. They've been acquitted by a jury. I understand that DOJ has decided to retry two other defendants, but the evidence is what the evidence has been. That's been public. There's been media stories written about it across the ideological spectrum. It's not like this is some kind of right-wing notion. Don't those revelations impair the credibility of the FBI, which you said earlier is very important?
Again, that case is, the judge has ordered that that case be retried. It's an ongoing matter, and I can't comment further.
How many FBI informants, agents, respectively, were involved in that operation?
I'm not going to comment about that particular case.
How much did the FBI spend on it?
It's an ongoing case. It's set for retrial, so I'm not going to comment on it.
The alleged Whitmer plot was announced October 7, 2020, within a month before the U.S. presidential election. How come that timing for the FBI's announcement of this plot?
That's an ongoing case. I'm not going to comment on it. I can tell you that in every case, we follow the facts and the evidence and the law, and we do so without regard to politics or ideology.
FBI's got a notorious history on exactly that kind of thing, and you have no comment about that exposure of that during the month before the presidential election, or the propriety of doing
it. Time has expired. The gentlewoman from Pennsylvania.
Let him answer the question. Usually that's the practice, is he gets to answer the question that I've posed.
Did you have a question?
Yeah, I did ask a question.
Okay, yes, you may answer the question.
That's an ongoing case. It's set for a retrial. The judge has set it for a retrial, so I'm not going to comment further.
Thank you. Now the gentleman's time has expired.
In the latest example of corruption from the D.C. court circuit, Judge Christopher Cooper fails to recuse himself and gives an over-the-top, extra-harsh sentence to Dr. Simone Gold. And the reason that he should recuse himself is because she rejected him once romantically in college. That's kind of something that stings for low-ego people, especially the high-ambitious, proud types like judges. All too often, they hate you forever for one little slight, especially leftists. The Biden puppet regime is creating a permanent U.S. Postal Service division to deliver and return ballots in U.S. elections. Nothing to see here. I'm sure it won't be abused, and I'm sure that we can absolutely trust the U.S. Postal Service. If you can't tell, I'm being very sarcastic. This is horrible. They're going to abuse it. According to Laura Logan, they are giving out social security numbers to illegal aliens at the U.S. border and all the benefits thereof, which won't last much longer now. According to the fine print, they now have mandatory COVID-19 and probably other vaccinations lined up for Americans. Look at this.
I'm just going to quote something from a government website. I'm not going to comment on it. I'm not going to spin it. I'm just going to quote it word for word. So there is absolutely no way that I could be accused of inauthenticity or bereft of integrity. And it's from the Department of Health and Human Services, proposed budget for 2023. The HHS includes the FDA, the CDC, the NIH, and a bunch of other agencies of government. So, the proposed budget for 2023 is almost $2 trillion. That's up from $1.3 trillion in 2020. And included in this budget, and again, I'm just quoting the government's own words, quote, HHS includes in this budget the Vaccines for Adults program, a new mandatory program modeled after the existing Vaccines for Children program, unquote.
I hope that you have found this video to be of value. If you did, please consider liking, sharing, and perhaps subscribing at nemosnewsnetwork.com/news. Also, don't forget we are 100% listener supported and heavily censored. So if you want to support us or shop Patriot with our Patriot sponsors, you can do so at nemosnewsnetwork.com/sponsors. We'll see you on the next one, and enjoy this really cool video I found from Lawrence Sellin.
Whether we believe in our capacity for self-government or whether we abandon the American Revolution and confess that a little intellectual elite in a far distant capital can plan our lives for us better than we can plan them ourselves.
The accumulation of excessive power has made the federal government a self-serving and self-preserving entity, unaccountable to the American people, and operating outside of constitutional constraints. The U.S. government has become a corrupt one-party state, composed of mutually supportive Democrat and Republican politicians, administered by a permanent dictatorial bureaucracy, all controlled by transnational interests who plunder American assets for personal power and profit while attempting to maintain the illusion of democracy. Once exposed, when blatant and outrageous lies are no longer sufficient to soothe the electorate into complacency, such a government must curtail freedom and oppress the people in order to retain power. The politically contaminated Department of Justice and the Federal Bureau of Investigation have created a two-tier justice system in which those serving the one-party state are never held accountable for their crimes, while opponents of federal overreach and malfeasance are treated like Soviet-era political prisoners without rights or due process. It is a government that cannot be reformed through the electoral process because election integrity can no longer be assured. Many Americans ask, how was the United States transformed from a constitutional republic into a one-party state inching towards totalitarianism? It resulted from the eventual convergence of the separately evolving political and economic philosophies of the Democrat and Republican parties that occurred during the Cold War's clash between capitalism and communism. It was a shift in support from American constitutional nationalism to authoritarian transnationalism, either corporate or communist, today represented by the global governance models of the World Economic Forum and the Chinese Communist Party. Both advocate systems in which small ruling elites oversee billions of virtual slaves without individual rights or property. In a world without nations, there are no citizens to which rulers need cater or be accountable, just humans as replaceable parts in lands to be exploited. Stated simply, It was the political and economic abandonment and degradation of American citizens in favor of transnationalism by both Democrats and Republicans that has paved the way for the emergence of an American one-party totalitarian state. About the same time, the Democrat Party shifted its base of support from American workers to wealthy donors and corporate liberals who were investing heavily in the global economy. Republicans were responding to the needs of large multinational corporations rather than American small business, which was the backbone of the U.S. economy and the American middle class. In parallel, American communists, who embrace a governance model similar to the corporate globalists, never abandoned the notion of fundamentally transforming the United States of America. The takeover of the Democrat Party by communist elements followed the pattern witnessed after the 1917 Russian Revolution. At that time, the political left widely believed that a violent proletarian revolt would sweep across Europe and ultimately North America. It did not. As a result, the Communist International began to investigate other ways to create the state of societal hopelessness and alienation necessary as a prerequisite for socialist revolution. In essence, to erode Western democracy from within. The single most important organizational component of that effort was a communist think tank called the Institute for Social Research, popularly known as the Frankfurt School. The task of the Frankfurt School was first to undermine the foundation of Western civilization that emphasized the uniqueness of the individual, and second, to determine new cultural forms that would increase the disaffection of and the division among the population. Just as in classical economic Marxism, where certain groups like workers and peasants are a priori good, and other groups like the bourgeoisie and capital owners are evil, in cultural Marxism, feminists, racial and ethnic minorities, and those who define themselves according to sexual orientation are deemed good and victims of societal justice. It logically follows, then, that white males and privilege, and by extension Western civilization, are automatically and irredeemably malevolent. Likewise, when the violence perpetrated by radicals in the 1960s failed to spark revolution in the United States, American communists adopted the tactics of the Frankfurt School, spawning new cultural forms like critical race theory, transgenderism, sexual grooming of children, and even a tolerance for pedophilia, all to create societal degradation, division, and conflict, again, essential for radical political change. American communists concluded that the best means to create a one-party state was to take over the Democrat Party. The process to establish a one-party state was already underway in the Democrat Party in the mid-1960s through immigration and social welfare legislation meant to generate a permanent Democrat voting majority. The Hart-Celler Immigration and Nationalization Act of 1965 was designed to import new Democrat voters from third world countries, while President Lyndon Johnson's Great Society and War on Poverty programs were meant to create dependency on the federal government, mainly among black Americans, which tragically led to the destruction of the black family. The Biden regime's open borders policy is simply a radical extension of the American voter replacement concept initiated by the Hart-Celler Immigration and Nationality Act of 1965, and consistent with the World Economic Forum's view that American workers are replaceable parts. To the detriment of the American people and the health of the country, As the Democrat Party moved ever more politically leftward, the Republicans followed. The American two-party system was further subverted as Democrats ran as Republicans in conservative districts. It is why so many Republicans so easily and so often vote with Democrats on critical national issues. Republican leaders do not oppose their Democrat counterparts because they do not want to challenge a ruling class, they want to be part of it. The Republican Party has solidified its choice to no longer represent what had been its constituency, but to adopt the identity of junior partners in the ruling class. The fusion of Democrat and Republican ideologies based on transnationalism precipitated the separation of the federal government from the American people. Nevertheless, the Democrat and Republican parties are now irretrievably linked to and financially dependent upon transnational entities. Today, the United States is ruled by a political aristocracy that sees itself as distinct from the American people and as the only element capable of governing the country, and those who oppose them as having no intellectual or legal right to do so. The Bible says that a house divided against itself cannot stand. Likewise, a government separated from the people also cannot stand. It is a fundamental principle of our constitutional republic that the efficiency and effectiveness of government are directly dependent upon the trustworthiness of government officials as representatives and executors of the views and desires of the people. The U.S. federal government no longer serves that function. There are many challenges facing the United States that cannot be effectively addressed without solving two fundamental problems. First, the federal government as an institution is hopelessly corrupt. And second, although we have elections, we do not have representative government. It is no longer a contest between Democrat and Republican ideologies, but a battle between the entrenched power of the bipartisan political establishment versus the freedom and well-being of the American people. There is a winning coalition in the United States, one inclusive of all Americans, one for all those who believe in a simple proposition: honest, representative, and effective government. But there will be no solutions emanating from Washington, D.C., because it has made itself an enemy of the American people. We can only restore our constitutional republic through a nationwide, bottom-up political insurgency based on the Second Amendment's right to keep and bear arms and the Tenth Amendment's restrictions on the powers of the federal government. It is time to take America back.